Welcome to a Juno Afternoon on Tuesday, March 20th, 2018. I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew. On today's show, we'll talk to members of Capital Blend, Pete Kelly and John Binney, playing a benefit for the Haven House this week. We'll learn about the upcoming Polaris House Spring Celebration fundraiser, and we'll hear from Frank Gattas with the Juno History Theater Project, talking about Any Given Child's art excursion to the theater. Those interviews, National Native Nudes, Bird Note, music and more, live and local on a Juno Afternoon.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The Trump administration is discussing plans to address opioid abuse and overdose in the U.S. President Trump talked about the approach Monday, which includes work to prevent addiction through the way the drug is prescribed and efforts to try to stop the flow of opioids at ports, shipments, and border crossings. Federal statistics show overdose rates are highest among non-Hispanic whites and American Indians and Alaska Natives. The Trump administration is meeting with tribal leaders this week to discuss tackling opioid addiction. Interior Secretary Ryan Zinke met with tribal leaders in Arizona on Monday. Plans for Indian Country include an opioid task force with assistance from federal agents. In a Twitter post about the meeting in Arizona, Zinke pledged to work with tribes from a government-to-government standpoint. Last week, the U.S. Senate Committee on Indian Affairs held a hearing on opioids and Indian Country. Tribal health care professionals testified it's putting a strain on already tight resources. They say needs include funding and improved health care. Zinke is expected to meet next with tribal leaders in Wisconsin. Meanwhile, the Oglala Sioux Tribe in South Dakota is joining a lawsuit against nearly two dozen opioid manufacturers and distributors. The action makes plaintiffs of at least four tribes in the state. South Dakota Public Broadcasting's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
There have been several suits against U.S. opioid makers and distributors filed in the past few months. In South Dakota, the Rosebud Sioux and Flandreau Santee Sioux tribes and the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate filed suit in January. Now the Oglala Sioux tribe is getting involved. Plaintiffs contend the drug companies marketed the drugs to falsely conceal and minimize their addiction risks. The Oglala Sioux tribe wants damages for allegedly deceptive trade practices, fraudulent and negligent conduct, and violations of the federal RICO, or Racketeer Influenced and Corrupt Organization Act. Drug companies have denied wrongdoing in similar suits. For National Native News, I'm Gary Ellenbolt.
The Alaska State House Monday passed a resolution urging Governor Bill Walker to declare a linguistic emergency to help Native languages. The resolution calls on state agencies, the legislature, Native organizations, and others to work to strengthen Native language policies. According to the Alaska Native Language Preservation and Advisory Council, most of the 20 recognized indigenous languages in Alaska are predicted to become extinct by the end of the 21st century, unless there are efforts to support learning and speaking of the languages. The resolution passed with a vote of 34-4 and will now be sent to the Senate. A bill to help identify missing Native American women was recently signed into law in Washington state. It requires the state patrol to work with tribal law enforcement, tribes, urban Indian organizations, and the governor's Office of Indian Affairs. The agencies would work to increase state resources for reporting and identifying missing Native women throughout the state. Lawmaker Gina McCabe, the bill's sponsor, says there's no comprehensive data collection system for reporting or tracking missing Native women, and the bill seeks to help that problem. The bill will go into effect later this year. The National Congress of American Indians has released a report on tribes exercising domestic violence criminal jurisdiction over non-Indians. The report summarizes results of the first 5 years of expanded jurisdiction under provision of the Reauthorization of the Violence Against Women Act in 2013. It created a framework for tribal courts to prosecute non-Indians who commit domestic or dating violence on tribal lands. The report highlights successes and gaps in the law. Tribal leaders say more needs to be done to address the lack of jurisdiction to prosecute other crimes committed by non-Indians. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Quantic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by the law offices of Sanofsky Chambers, Saxe, Miller, and Monkman, a national tribal rights law firm with offices in Washington, D.C., New Mexico, California, and Alaska, and online at www.sanofsky.com.
Support for this program comes from Montana State University in Bozeman, offering an on-campus master's and online graduate certificate in Native American Studies. More information can be found at montana.edu/Native American.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
This is Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew, here in the studio with Pete Kelly and John Bitney of Capital Blend, a blend of artists from the Capitol, putting a fundraiser on for Haven House this Thursday. Thanks so much for joining me.
Glad to be here.
Thank you.
So tell me about this band and kind of the history here in Juneau.
Well, both John and I play in some multiple bands. We have our work at the Capitol, but we also play a lot of music. And we started playing probably the first time in about 2005, 2006 together. So we've kind of been on an informal basis band members for a lot of years. Last year we put together a quick compilation of musicians to go play out at Lemon Creek facility, just to go out there and give them some music, do a worship service, a Christian service. And that is where we met Kara Nelson from Haven House. And that's the connection between the Haven House fundraiser and this band.
And what instruments do you guys play?
Well, I play guitar, and sometimes I sing a little bit when I absolutely have to, but I do my best.
Yeah, it's rumored that I play drums.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Now, did I see you at Folk Fest last year?
No, I've never done that.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been a while since I've done the Folk Fest.
Not that there's anything wrong with folk music. But we're mostly just kind of good time rock and roll. And we've done a few fundraisers together. They're great fun.
How did your group kind of come together? Who's part of this iteration?
Well, most of us are legislators except for John. He's a government affairs person. I guess you call him a lobbyist. And we have two people from the House, Dave Tallarico and Dan Sadler. And then myself, I'm from the Senate, and then John. And then we have other vocalists who come in and help us out.
I heard you did a call out to vocalists.
Yeah, well, the fun thing about this is that the Capitol is a community within Juneau here is kind of the way I look at it. And it's always just amazing, you know, the people that come from around the state that have all these talents that coalesce here in the town every year. And whenever we sort of get these things going and we kind of ask who's out there and what talents and skills they bring, it's usually amazing what comes forward. I think we have about 9 different vocalists that we're drawing from within the building here. And just some of them are just really amazing. I hope folks can come and see them on Thursday because I'm just blown away by the talent that we're working with. They just sound great, and they certainly make us sound good and look good.
It's really a surprise when you hear somebody that has a great voice. That is the missing element in a lot of bands is somebody with just one of those killer voices. You know, this last year, this format where we pull a bunch of people together and have a fundraiser actually started last year with the fundraiser for the playground. And that was a huge success, and it was from the Senate. We just said, you know, there's a lot of people in Juneau that have helped us for years. When we come to the capital city, they get us housing and treat us quite well. And we wanted to give something back, and we did the fundraiser for the playground, and that was shockingly successful.
I don't know if you remember, but after Twin Lakes Playground had burned down, it was quite the traumatic event here in the community. And Senator Kelly here just worked with bringing us all together for that event, and we've just kind of kept it going, if you will, and wanted to just kind of keep that spirit going of having the Capitol community within the Juneau community here sort of connecting each other so we can give back a little bit to this community in terms of all you've given to us to be the hosting Capitol City here for many years, and so we appreciate that. So hopefully this is part of an effort on our part to do that. We want to keep that going.
So Haven House is a women's reentry program. They come from Lemon Creek Prison mostly, and they live in the house together. They have they aid them with treatment and job searches and those kinds of things. It's pretty touching, some of the work that's been done by Kara Nelson, who is the focal person on this. Haven House was started, I thought it was Kara who had started it, but actually it was started several years ago by some Juneau people that just kind of out of the blue, let's start helping. And so we want to make sure they get all the help they can, because those kinds of programs, besides the human element, that it's just good to do that for people to help them get back on their feet, those kinds of programs generally have a tremendous impact on recidivism. They're dropping it.
How does this ban kind of relate back to the work you do at the Capitol?
I'm not sure. It's just that we all come here to the same city. We're from all over Alaska, and we all come to the same city once a year, and we like to play music. So that's the underlying thing. That's the thread that themes the theme that threads through all of this is that we all like to play music. And I think you said it's a good way to get a gig, to do a fundraiser, and there's a little bit of that going on.
You mentioned you have a lot of outstanding singers. Are there any performances or songs you're really looking forward to?
Oh, goodness. We had a young lady that works up at the building last night did a Leanne Rimes song that I think we're still recovering from that. Leanne Rimes is quite a vocalist, and so to actually nail that song was pretty impressive.
Yeah, and just to show you kind of the diversity of music you can expect there, we also did Dead or Alive by Bon Jovi by a young woman. She's just a young mom here in town, and, man, she's got some pipes on her.
So. Yeah, so everything from country to folk to blues to rock, we've got a little bit of something for everybody, and the idea is folks to come and have a good time and, of course, give a little bit to the cause. But, no one is going to be having more fun in the house than we are.
Clearly.
I can guarantee you that.
And it's also possible that, just like last year, two people who are bagpipists, I wish I could remember that name, what you actually call a bagpipist, they showed up and we did an AC/DC song with them, and they did the lead with bagpipes. And I'm telling you, it works.
So where can people learn more about the event?
And just show up on Thursday night and at 7 o'clock at the Jack, the old armory, and because you don't have to pay to get in, but it would be appreciate it if you give a donation. There's going to be food. There will be a bar there. It's a non-hosted bar.
Fabulous. Well, so. Thank you both for coming, Pete Kelly and John Bittany of the Capitol Blend Band this Thursday night at the Jack.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks
Hope
for
to
having
see
us. Yeah.
Thank you.
As Alaskans, we strengthen our communities by donating to nonprofits. We teach our children how to create a better tomorrow. We do all this because we care. What better way to teach the next generation about giving than to show them how easy it is to donate through PicClickGive? Share the gift of giving with your children when filling out your family PFD applications online. Together, PicClickGive.
This is Juno Afternoon. I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew, here in the studio with Roy Anderson, Daryl Wilkerson, and Bruce Van Dusen from the Polaris House, with our first spring celebration fundraiser happening this May. Thanks so much for coming.
Yay.
Thank you for having us. It's good to be here.
Tell me a little bit more about Polaris House and the services you offer here in Juneau.
Well, Polaris House was started in Juneau by the local mental health center and the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And its purpose is to serve adults who are living with a serious and persistent mental illness diagnosis to make sure that we provide opportunities for growth, opportunities for participation, and most importantly, opportunities for the person to develop independent living skills.
What are some of the goals for your clients?
Oh, we really strongly urge clients to consider paid employment. Paid employment is one of the greatest vehicles for mental health recovery that we know of. We also support and encourage people to participate in local education opportunities, such as the college and the technical institute. And we focus on education, GEDs, and other kinds of things. And then we ensure that all of our members have access to all of the housing that they need, whether it's moving to a better house, advocating with a landlord, that kind of things. So we focus on the three main areas of employment, education, and housing, but we also provide a set of services that we describe as community supports and services. And that's everything from Social Security applications, food stamps, Medicaid, Medicare, whatever it might be.
What are some of your success stories?
Well, some of the success stories is I started with Polaris House in August of 2013, and at that time there were a number of people who I had encountered were Polaris House clients who talked to me about, oh, I really don't want to work, I'll never work, I don't need to work, and now they're employed.
Wow.
I talked to some people who were, I don't need school, there's no purpose for me to go to school, but they're now in school. And so it's really wonderful to see how a person can go from being marginalized to being fully engaged in community.
And how many folks do you work with here in Juneau?
We have an active membership right now of about 66. That means we see that person at least once every 30 days. But we have a growing average daily attendance. It ranges from 12 to 20 each day. Polaris House started in 2002, and we actually have over 475 active members, although most of them are not in Juneau right now.
Wow.
But we're members of Clubhouse International, so any of our members at Polaris House have access to over 300 clubhouses in more than 30 countries on six continents.
But we are the only accredited clubhouse in Alaska.
Incredible. So tell me about your first annual spring celebration fundraiser.
Well, basically it's going to happen on May 4th at Elizabeth Petrovich Hall. And we're going to have a catered dinner by Mary Soul, the new little Mexican restaurant here in Juneau. They're going to cater us enchiladas and spaghetti and or. We're also going to have a silent auction. Some of the items that's going to be at the auction are like a one-night stay at the Prospector for two.
Very nice.
We're going to have a whale-watching tour for two.
Oh.
We have a gift certificate for several of the restaurants here in town for a couple. M&M Tours has donated the whale watching tour, and the hangar, the salt,
Zen,
and possibly Sandpiper are going to be some of the restaurants that are donating gift certificates.
Are you still accepting donations for the silent auction?
We are accepting donations for the silent auction all the way up till April the
26th. Oh.
Also, we're having a 50-50 raffle if you want to win a little bit of cash.
Ooh.
And we're having Tom Loker, a local pianist, for our music, having a little dance area if you want to come down and get a little dancing going on. So there's a lot of things. A cash bar if you're interested in that. Tickets are $25 a piece for adults, $10 for children under 14. We've had several of the businesses already being willing and really receptive and donating us items for our silent auction, hoping that we can actually really put some funds away for our building that we greatly need. We have outgrown our space where we're at and just need a larger space.
What are your plans for finding a larger space?
Well, we've enlisted Carlton Smith. He's a local realtor, and he's been providing us help with identifying possible properties. And we've looked at a couple of properties. Those properties we looked at, for our purposes, need intensive remodeling. We have to raise the money to be able to do that kind of work. So that would take some time. We were one of the businesses that sent a proposal to the city for the Cornerstone 9290 Hurlock Avenue property. At this time, we're not really sure what direction the city's going to go, whether they're going to lease it or sell it. I'm sure that they'll let us know soon. We're looking. You know, the Hurlock property, we're kind of all fired up about that. It's something that we can afford, and we don't need to make any changes to the building. You know, we can just step right in and start doing things. So we're waiting to see what the final decision is going to be from the city council for that. And as I mentioned, we may be able to use the second floor in the building where we are now, but again, we need to increase income so that we can afford the increase in the rent that would be incurred if we had that.
What would this larger space allow you to do?
Allow us to serve more people and not be bumping into each other all the time. You know, we're on 1,800 square feet, and sometimes we have 20 members and 5 staff in the building, and so we're very crowded. Having more space would allow us to not only better serve the ones that we are serving, but also to increase the number of people that we can serve and allow bigger space for the different work areas that we talked about a few minutes ago.
Where can folks learn more about your organization?
Well, you can go online to Polaris House, AK.org, because we have an updated website. We're on Facebook. It's at PolarisHouse.org. And then you can come visit us at 434 West Willoughby Avenue. We're right over here at Willoughby Place. And we're very happy to entertain anyone who comes through the door at any time and wants to know more about us. We also have awareness packets that we can hand out that include a DVD about our business, a brochure, and then a letter that we wrote to the city of Juneau. It's a communication that the members want the city to know about Polaris House.
And where can people purchase tickets for the event?
Well, we have a phone number that you can call us. We can make arrangements for payment, or people can come to the 434 West Willoughby address. If you call us and say, I'd like to buy tickets, but I can't make it down there, just tell us where you're going to be. We'll come sell you tickets. We'll come to wherever you are.
Was there anything I forgot to ask you that you'd like to mention about this event or Polaris House?
Well, I mean, it's our first fundraiser, so it's obviously going to be some fun lessons as well as a good time. There's great dinner and music and lots of opportunities. I think one of the things I'm really looking forward to is being able to have members talk to the public that night to really say, this is what I receive when I'm at Polaris House. And I know that there are a lot of families here in Juneau who have a member of their family who could use this type of mutual support to become more independent. So we want to make sure that folks know how to get to Polaris House, how to, you know, what do you have to do to become a member, what does it mean to be a member, and those different kinds of things. So it's really very easy to be a member. You come in, we give you a form, you take it to your provider, your provider faxes it back to us, and then we sit and kind of go over a few paperwork kind of things for about 20 minutes with a person, and they're a member. So, and it can be done as little as 2 days, so it's very quick.
Well, thank you so much for coming. This is a Juneau Afternoon here in the studio with Roy Anderson, Daryl Wilkerson, and Bruce Van Dusen.
Thank you very much. It was great to be
thank
here.
Thank you.
Hello, this is Stephen Pfister, Facility Manager at Centennial Hall, part of the CBJ Parks and Recreation. Centennial Hall, Juneau's Convention Center, located in the heart of downtown's Willoughby District, is an important economic generator in our community, hosting a variety of events with over 80,000 people attending each year. Events include the Alaska Folk Festival, Celebration, and a variety of conventions, conferences, and fundraisers. For more information, call 586-5283 or visit our website at centennialhall.net.
This is Juneau Afternoon. I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew. Up next, a short story from Mudrooms with Jenny John.
Our next speaker is Jenny John. She's a native of Portland and has lived throughout the Pacific Northwest, Texas, and Oaxaca, Mexico, before landing in Juneau almost 3 years ago. Jenny enjoys the water, spending time with her family and friends who have become family. Jenny works in the health office at Gastineau Elementary, so if your knee hurts or you need a Band-Aid, you should probably go see her. Please welcome Jenny to the stage.
In 2009, I was part of a medical mission team, and we would go to Nicaragua. We were invited by the Miskito Indians to come into their village, a village called Hualaquitang, and it is on the Rio Coco. And if you know anything about geography, or if you don't, I'm just going to tell you anyway. The Rio Coco is the border river between Honduras and Nicaragua. We were invited to go there, so we went. They have, it's classic jungle. To get there, it is an 8-hour drive on unpaved roads, followed by a 2-day canoe ride on the river. And the canoes are tall trees that have been felled and dug out by machete, and they are round-bottom boats, and they're about, 3 feet wide by 60 feet long, so they're long and skinny, and when you sit in it, your knees are touching the person in front of you, and you have knees in the back of you, and they fit about 8 people with our gear. And it is 2 solid days of sitting in the hot sun in Central America, rain and heat and everything for 2 days, and you get to know the person in front of you really well, and you get to lean on the person behind you. And you pretty much can only talk to those people unless you lean over the side of the boat, in which case you risk tipping the entire boat because, like I said, it is a round-bottom boat. So we go, and the more that you go into the river, into the jungle, the more it becomes like Indiana Jones. The trees are all low over you. There's snakes in the river, and there's caiman, which is like a crocodile, more like an alligator, and turtles in the water, and the water is disgusting and gross, and it's hot. And on the way there, you have to spend the night in a village. You ask permission, and then they let you stay in the village, and then you get in the boat the next day, and you do the whole thing, sun up to sundown, you're on this boat. And we're in the village after 3 days of travel, of just being in the country, 3 days of travel. And like I said, it was a medical mission, so we set up. And one of the first questions that we ask is, if you are experiencing any of these signs and symptoms of having a parasite, please stand in this large section over here. Anyone else who has any other ailments, shoulders, feet, pregnancy, whatever, and you need to be seen for something else, please stand over here. Needless to say that this parasite group is very, very large. So we come with a lot of anti-parasitic medicine, and we pass that out like candy, because that's what they've asked us to come and do and help. So we're there, we're 3 days in the jungle, and we get into the boat to come back, and we go and we spend the night on the river again in someone's hut. The huts that we're staying in are basically just poles, and they are bamboo walls and thatched roofs. And we're sleeping in hammocks, and our hammocks are up on these poles, as many as we can get of our team into one hut, so we can occupy as little space as possible and all stay together. So putting all of those hammocks up, you're pretty much at the whim and mercy of where the hammock could stay the best with your weight and everyone else's weight around you and not make the whole hut collapse. So it's already been 3 or 4 days. We're hot, we're stinky, we're dirty, we've just done this great thing, helped all these people, kissed all the faces, and done all this. So we're there, and it's pitch dark, and it's night, and it's silent. And I wake up, and I realize that from my waist down is completely wet, and I'm covered in diarrhea. And I'm laying there, and I'm thinking, what time is it? It's pitch dark. And the really big problem is that the hammock of the person underneath me is about 6 inches from my waist. And I don't want to wake him up like that. And I don't think that he wants to be woken up like that either. My hammock had been hung about 5 feet off the ground. So I have to be lifted up into my hammock in order to get in there that night anyway. And one of the guys had put me in my hammock, and I was in there. And I wake up in the middle of the night, covered in stuff. What time is it? I have no idea. Is it almost dawn? Because I can make it to almost dawn. And I go in and out of sleep, and I am crampy, and I'm hurting, and it's stinky, and it's hot, and it's dark. And I can't get out of my hammock because it's 5 feet off the ground. It dawn never comes. So I have to get out of my hammock and make my way over the cows and over the snakes to try to get to that outhouse. So I hear somebody saying, oh. So I sit up and I get out of my hammock like this, meaning that all of that stuff is coming up all over my clothes, all the way up, and then I have to go into the outhouse. I'm covered in it. It's not coming off. There's nothing I can do. There's no running water. The next day, somebody helps clean me up. They strip me down. They put cleaner clothes on me. And then I have to get back into that boat for a whole another 8 hours of sitting there sick. I still don't feel good. So we're in the boat, and we're about 4 hours in, and I wave to my driver, and I'm like, I'm sorry, but we need to pull over. There's no rest areas, but if you could please pull over, I would really. And he's like, are you sure? I'm like, yeah, we need to pull over right now. Please hurry. So we pull over, and I scurry up a bank, still cramping, still not feeling very well. And I scurry up a bank, and I look around, and I don't see any snake tracks. So I pull down my pants, and I squat, and I realize that I am standing right over an anthill. You guys, that's gross. So I brush all the ants off my backside, and I walk all frumped over into the boat, and I can tell you that when we got back into the next village, it was the best shower I had ever had. Thanks.
Peace. is Bird Note. Ah, the first day of spring at last. Let's step outside and greet the new season. Clearly, the birds know something is up. Listen to that Buick's wren belt it out. The wren doesn't know the precise instant of the vernal equinox, of course. It's the moment when the sun is directly above the equator and day and night are nearly equal all over the world. Yet, the wren senses the growing hours of daylight through a surge of hormones. Both science and folklore tie spring to the renewal of nature as the world awakens from the long, cold winter. Otoe shouts out its burry notes. And wow, there's a tiny ruby-crowned kinglet flashing its red crown. Listen to its song bubble forth. Now there's a comical sound coming from the marsh. It's a Virginia rail, unseen but hardly unheard, ringing in the new season. Spring has sprung. The birds declare it official. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann.
Support for Bird Note comes from Songbird Coffee, offering bird-friendly, organic, shade-grown coffees for over 20 years. Learn more at birdnote.org/songbird.
Hey, Folkfest fans. KTOO wants your favorite festival-related photos for our public art show, Folk Life. How about that great picture of Buddy Tabor, a scene of kids dancing at Centennial Hall, a late-night jam session? You're invited to send us three images that will hang on our walls for the month of April. The show will be super simple, no frames. Just email your three images to arts@ktoo.org by March 30th, and we'll print and hang them. Details at ktoo.org.
This is KTOO Juno, Annie Bartholomew here on a Juno afternoon with Frank Katast from the Juno Histories Theater Project.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. Thanks for coming.
Thanks for having me.
I'm so curious about this project that you guys have been working on over at the Jack.
Yeah. It's called Anyat Kusani, Noble People of the Land, the Juno Histories Theater Project. It's something that I've been honored to work on or work with for the last few years with the Ping Chong Company from New York City. And Ryan Conroe, who lived in Juneau for many, many years. And the three of us, myself, Ryan, and Ping, have been kind of working hard on this particular project for the last few years. And it's great to see it within fruition in the next week or two.
How did the collaboration come about?
Oh, I've known Ryan for a long time. As a matter of fact, the very first show I did here in Juneau, the very first rehearsal, I was like, oh, I don't know anybody. And then this guy came up and he's like, hi, I'm Ryan. And he was the first person
what
I met
with.
What
was the show?
The government inspector at Perseverance in 2008. So he came up and he was the lead in it and he was super, super nice. And I was like, oh, this is going to be fine. You know, I was really super nervous because it was my first time acting in Juno and my very first rehearsal. And he was so nice and, you know, made me feel really comfortable. So I've known him for quite a few years. And then back in 2015, he was here for a long, long time in Alaska and in Juneau for 12 years. And then he went to New York City to kind of, as part of a fellowship or something like that to learn this particular style of Ping Chong's interview-based documentary-style theater. And then he started working there. And the next year, I was working at Sea Alaska Heritage, and they asked me if I'd be interested in learning this particular style. And I was like, yeah. So between Perseverance and Sea Alaska and Ping Chong, they sent me to New York to learn the style for an intensive. Because when Ryan first moved to New York, Ping interviewed him as if he was one of the people that was going to participate in one of the projects.
Wow.
And that's a great way to teach the particular style. And so he goes, well, I'm from Juneau and this is the history of that. And he goes, we should do a project there. And so here we are. And when I was over there, they kind of let me know this. And I was like, that's awesome. And, you know, that was 3 years ago. And so this last summer, they're like, it's a go. And I'm like, great. it's been an awesome learning experience for the last couple of years.
Tell me about the Undesirable Element series that he's been working on all over the U.S.
Yeah. Ping Chong, he's a super, super nice guy from New York City. He's Chinese-American. And he has been doing this particular style of theater for the last 25 years, I think. He's been a theater maker for 40, but this particular style he's been honing for the last 25 years. And basically they go to like underrepresented communities and learn people's stories. And so this particular story – so anyways, he's been doing this particular style for a long time. You know, he does Muslims in America post 9/11. He goes over to, you know, different countries. He's done it all across the world. He went over to Japan and did interviews with people that had moved to Japan but were never quite but weren't Japanese themselves, even though they lived there for many years, and what that felt like to them. So this particular project, he came, and we're very curious about the particular area we're in right now.
The Willoughby District.
The Willoughby District, the Juneau Indian Village, all this particular area. And, you know, what has happened to it over the last, you know, I think our first entry within this particular project is like in the late 1700s, you know, people telling stories. So it's kind of giving the history of this particular area and how it used to be a really vibrant neighborhood, and now it's not quite so much. You know, there's still people that live within the village, but you can walk by without even knowing it's there. Where even 20 or even 30 years ago, it was houses and families, and you know, all of this where we're at right now was ocean. So it's really interesting to hear people's stories talking about this, what it was like. So.
You mentioned there's a line about a radio station being right where the ocean was.
Yeah, they're like, you know, the access to ocean, and this is all filling. And he's like, well, what's there now? And you're like, oh, radio station, Egan Drive, you know, things like that. They would all been in the ocean at that particular time. And people have memories of, you know, of when they filled in. So I think it's really fascinating. And the interesting thing about this project is they're not actors generally. Mm-hmm. These are people telling their real stories. So the process of this project and this style of the Undesirable Element style is we go and we find community members and have them tell their stories, and we do an interview with them. And we interview for sometimes 2 or 3 hours. And then this project, we had 20 participants or something, so 2 or 3 hours for each one. And then we start narrowing it down based on theme and stories and different backgrounds and things like that. And we do follow-up interviews, and then probably another follow-up interview after that, each one taking another 2-3 hours. So we get, you know, these amazing stories from our participants, and we have a really great group this year, or this for this project.
Yeah, tell me about the cast.
So we have Ernestine Hayes, we have Paul Marks Sr., Lillian Petershore, Marcelo Quinto, and Walter Sobolev Jr. So we have some heavy hitters and longtime Juneau residents that have such amazing stories of them telling us. It's so hard for us because, you know, we're trying to keep this into a relatively short project for the presentation, you know, an hour and 20 minutes.
But that's very short.
For five amazing stories. And when we're doing this process, it takes a really long time. But, I mean, you're like, tell me your life story in an hour and a half. And people are like, you know. And a lot of times they're like, well, my grandparents came here and here's what happened. So you start from even there and then telling the stories that go along. So it's been really, really fascinating. And everyone's been telling such amazing, amazing stories. And we're really excited to present this to Juneau.
You said you worked with some of the experts of Blonde Indian, Ernestine Hayes' book. That
Yeah. I mean, the wonderful thing about, you know, helping, because Ryan and myself, Ping was here for a lot of the interviews, and he's been helping kind of guide us along. But Ryan and I put the script together, and it's been really interesting going through everyone's stories, and it really helped to have Ernestine's Blonde Indian to pull from. Like, what was that? Oh, yeah. You know, and pulling different excerpts and stories from that.
Way she describes Juneau.
Oh, yeah. It's
unrecognizable.
Yeah.
From,
I mean, that was the thing that kind of, and that's sort of the journey we want people to go on with this particular project. And we have, you know, projections from Greg Mitchell going up on behind him from people's personal photos and, you know, photos of the area. It's interesting because they're like, you know, right over there where the parking garage, that was where my house was. And we had 10 kids. And you're like, oh, my gosh. And, you know, like one bedroom houses, you know, it's really fascinating. And that's what I loved about Blonde Indian is that it kind of transported you to this faraway place. But it's right here in Juneau.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what this project's going to do as well.
Was it difficult to kind of teach them how to act?
Well, that's what we're doing right now, and they're doing a great job. I mean, all of it is the Undesirable Elements style is everyone has a music stand with a script, and we add theatrical elements. So we're not asking them to memorize or do anything. They didn't need any acting experience, which makes it a little bit more approachable for people. Because if you want to be like, now memorize everything, and you're like, ugh. So they're doing a fantastic job. We're still in rehearsals right now. And we're honing the script. I think tomorrow is the deadline for really honing the script, because people are like, oh, well, actually it was this. That now that I'm thinking about it. And you go, oh, okay, great. And, you know, it's like and we're cutting stuff, you know, slowly, slowly. And it's like you're simmering down something where you're removing stuff, but it's becoming more potent. So,
and they're trusting you with their stories.
Yeah, it's really amazing. And they've been so respectful to us and to each other and to their own stories. And it's been really a magical experience.
And you've brought some eighth graders in to kind of see the magic.
Yeah. As part of Any Given Child, they do an eighth grade excursion. So all the eighth graders across the school district will come and watch the stories. As a matter of fact, the very first performance before these people perform in front of anyone else is going to be in front of eighth graders. And so for a couple of days, we have all the eighth graders bust in and going to watch the performances. And Ryan and I both went into the schools and did small presentations for all the eighth graders to let them know what to expect and what the particular style is and how we pulled some of these stories out. I mean, a lot of it's like he does this thing where you have a river on – he draws a river and puts a stone at the top and the bottom of the river, and the top is when you're born and the bottom is where you are like today. And he goes, okay, now tell me about a first day of school. So all the kids are going like, which day? And you're like, any first day. And then they, oh, yeah. Well, I remember I was in Arizona and this happened. And then, you know, those beautiful details. And that's the kind of stuff that we pull out and put into stories like this.
Well, very cool. I'm so excited to see it. Where can folks learn more about the showtimes?
It's all on the Jack website. And you can find, you know, Ping Chong Company on Facebook. You can get your tickets at the Jack, at Hearthside Books, and online. At jahc.org. And the show it's only for one weekend. So Thursday, March 29th, Friday, March 30th. And then we have both of those are at 7:30. And then on Saturday, March 31st is our last day. And we have a 2 p.m. and a 7:30 p.m. show.
Well, thank you so much for coming on the show, Frank Gattass from the Juno Histories Theater Project.
All right. Thank you so much.
Juno Afternoon, I'm your host, Annie Bartholomew. On tomorrow's show, Shelley Delaney will be your host. We'll get news about the upcoming Zach Gordon Easter egg hunt, Alan Akumia. We'll get your appetites ready for the senior pancake breakfast. We'll talk to country music group Love and Theft playing Wednesday. And we'll talk about Eagle Crest, that bird note, music and more tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, 3 on KTOO Juno. Forecast for tonight is scattered snow and rain showers, lows around 30, light winds in the Mendenhall Valley, lows around the mid-20s. America, America, America.